Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How is a generation shaped by the technologies available to it? And what special insights might be available to young people raised at a turning point in technological advancement? Americans born between 1991 and 1995 were brought up at just such a time, and they represent a sort of bridge between those of us who lived before the internet and those who can't imagine existing without it. Now that they are reaching college age, media ecologist Jack Meyer says it's worth looking closely at how they see the world and their place within it, since they are likely to have an outsized role in determining the course of our future. Jack Myers is chairman of the firm Media Advisory Group and a Peabody Award-winning documentary filmmaker. His new book is called Hooked Up, A New Generation's Surprising Take on Sex, Politics, and Saving the World. Jack, welcome to Think.
Thanks, Chris. It's good to be with you.
So we typically group generations in 20 or 25-year increments. What makes this small subset of the millennial generation so important to consider on its own?
Well, it's a great question. You know, when you group millennials, typically they're defined as the group born between around 1982 and 2002, the last generation to grow up in the 20th century. But as I started looking at the millennials and all the research done on the millennials, none of that research really took into account the fact that right in the middle in 1993 along came the internet, and it's a dividing line, as you point out, between everyone born before and everyone born after. So when I started researching that, I was really looking at that transformation, that chasm between the pre and the post-internet, and seeing what the differences would be. And what I found was this five-year generation who, as you say, are the bridge between the pre and the post-internet. They carry a lot of the baggage of the pre-internet age. They're defined often as being entitled and spoiled generation, but I found they're not at all. And they're our first window into the post-internet age. They're the first window that we have into what the world is likely to become. They're really internet pioneers. I call them the hooked-up generation, but they're really internet pioneers. They're the first across that bridge. They're the first across that. And they're leading the way into this new era and into the internet age. So as leaders, what I found that really differentiates them, like any pioneers, they're builders. And this particular group of five-year period is very focused on building. They're very focused on building a stable future, a more tolerant society. They're focused on doing social good. And for using online tools, because they're so familiar and comfortable with the internet, using online tools to bring people together and creating balance, including economic balance, political balance, and social balance.
I was interested to read that while they greatly value local community and local culture, their outlook on the world is very much a global one. What does that mean?
Well, they're both global and they're local. They don't define global, local, community. Their community is online. So when they're online, in many ways, it's like we went to the community center, the social center, the church, the school groups to get our community. They go online for community, and the people they're connecting with online are not only from within their immediate social circles, but all over the country and all over the world. And they're not defining people by where they live or how close they are in proximity to them.
So if they can find somebody who collects what they collect or who plays the game they play, that's where they find a relationship.
Exactly. And they're forming many different communities around their different interests. So, and they're bringing those communities together. We found that while Facebook research has shown that the average person can manage about 150 relationships, this particular generation is managing an average of over 400 relationships online, and they say they actually have a relationship that they consider a relationship that they know these people with 90 to 95% of those people.
And so, is it the case that for this generation, being connected to people digitally feels about as valid as being connected face to face in real life?
Well, that's a difficult question to ask because, what for them feels like being connected may for those of us who are older in pre-internet ages, we might take the same feelings or the same perceptions and interpret them completely differently. The most important thing that I found was how positive this generation is and how positive the outlook is because of them. I believe this is an incredibly important book for them because it's the first book that's come along that gives them a positive outlook on their future, that they're a much maligned generation. In fact, if for those watching Aaron Sorkin's new TV show on HBO Newsroom, mm-hmm. in the very first episode, the very first scene, Will McAvoy, the newsman played by Jeff Daniels, is berating a 20-year-old college co-ed and calls her part of the worst generation of college students ever, the worst ever. And what I'm finding is that, in fact, this generation of college students may be the next great generation because they are so focused, their heads are down, they're focused on their future, they realize how challenging and difficult it's going to be, they're hardworking, and really because they're focused on building this a future that's meaningful and relevant not only to them, but to others. So when you ask, they feel connected, it's second nature to them. It's a birthright to embrace diversity and to accept human equality. They believe that not only are they connected to everyone on Facebook or online, to everyone as human beings. And that's just second nature to them. It's not something they believe they have to enforce or encourage. They don't comprehend the need to encourage or enforce equal rights and human diversity.
Is there a danger that they feel somewhat connected to everyone but not necessarily responsible for everyone?
That's a really good question. They're a very responsible generation in that they're taking responsibility for their own lives and for their role in the world. And they believe they're more interested in finding careers and job paths where they are contributing and where they are doing good. But I think because of the nature of the world they've grown up in, they understand they cannot take responsibility for others in that context for example, not only have they grown up with the internet, they've grown up with two decades of disruption, of economic collapse, of political polarization, of 9/11, a war on terror. This is the world they've known, and to them, the internet is their community center. It's global. Everyone is equal on the internet. So they have strong opinions, but in terms of taking responsibility for others, I think that the responsibility they're taking is to accept and embrace the opinions of others and their right to have those opinions, and they expect others to respect the opinions that they have and their right to have those opinions. So a lot of the polarization we're experiencing, I believe, is going to disappear over the next two decades as this generation gains more and more influence and power.
I think it's really interesting that they have a far greater tolerance not only for ethnic and racial diversity, but also for greater tolerance for homosexuality, even among those young people who consider themselves religious. Do you think this generation will be the one to eliminate legal, if not personal, biases against LGBT freedoms?
Well, eliminate's a very strong word, but I certainly believe that this generation is going to take a very powerful leadership position in advocating for all forms of human rights, and at the forefront, women's rights and gay rights. The 60% of college students over the next decade, college graduates over the next decade, will be women. So we're going to be living in an increasingly female-centric society. They're going to be taking more and more important, powerful roles in all aspects of the community, in business, in education, in religion, and what's interesting is that because this generation has grown up online with images of sex and sexuality, not only online, on television and movies, so human equality extends to sexual behavior, and especially for women, they've grown up believing, both men and women, believing that women can be sexy and smart. They can be sexual and serious. And there's no baggage attached by women or men to sexual liberation. And so in the same context, there's really no baggage being attached to homosexual activities, to gay marriage. They have grown up in an environment where, although it's polarized in many ways, their experiences with people, especially online, encourage them to recognize their basic equality. And they're also experiencing growing up in schools that have LGBT clubs and where gay lifestyles are more accepted as part of the normal part of living.
Any sense of what this kind of sexual liberation across the board will mean at the point that they reach the age when people of previous generations have looked at forming long-term partnerships or marriages?
One of the most fascinating parts of the research I did was asking that exact question. Because the women, especially in college, are recognizing the competition is intense, the glass ceilings need to be broken, because they understand how hard they need to work to move forward, the last thing they're interested in are long-term relationships right now, and thus the title of the book, Hooked Up, mm-hmm. which is, of course, being hooked on the Internet, hooked together by the Internet, but it's also hooking up in relationships defined and managed on the Internet, and they believe in short-term relationships. But they're also focused on marriage and more traditional relationships, having children, but not until their late 20s, early 30s, when their careers are established. They intend to continue working for the most part after they have families. And they're treating relationships as something that's very serious. They're not going into them lightly. So I'm predicting that this generation, in fact, will have traditional relationships and will be more likely to hold on to them. Such a large percentage of them have experienced divorce and seen the impact of divorce. I believe we're going to slowly begin to see divorce rates declining starting about a decade from now.
And we've already seen those numbers declining among college-educated Americans, but the situation is different for those who don't achieve a higher education.
You know, it's interesting, the statistic of 60% of college graduates being women, even though the population is, you know, 51-52% female. And it's because more women recognize that their futures are dependent upon jobs that require college education. And more men are going into careers that do not necessarily require a college education. I think the most important thing to think of this generation, though, whether they go to college or not, is that fundamentally they're the first to graduate high school or come into the workforce with inherent knowledge and understanding of how to make the Internet work, how to use the Internet to create stability out of chaos.
Jack Myers is with us. He's a media ecologist and chairman of the firm Media Advisory Group. We're talking about his new book, Hooked Up, a new generation's surprising take on sex, politics, and saving the world. We'd love to hear what you think at 1-800-933-5372. You can also join us via email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can study a variety of topics such as creative writing, human rights, and the arts. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is media ecologist Jack Myers. He's chairman of the firm Media Advisory Group and author of the new book Hooked Up, A New Generation's Surprising Take on Sex, Politics, and Saving the World. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. The email address is think@kera.org. I love this, Jack. There's been a lot of scientific skepticism over claims that multitasking is truly the most effective way to get things done, but this generation definitely believes in it. Because of all they do simultaneously, they have managed to do the impossible and live what amounts to a 37-hour day.
That's exactly right. It's beyond me, frankly. I have trouble doing one thing at a time, no less two.
I'm with you.
But they're truly texting multiple. You know, sometimes they'll have a dozen different text tracks going on at the same time with different people, and sometimes interconnecting those people. They're doing homework. They have music on behind them. They're listening to. They're dealing on a one-to-one basis with people, and they're doing their homework. So it's pretty stunning what this generation points out. And as you pointed out, 34 to 37 hours a day, including sleep and school time.
And I suppose it's good that they're comfortable with this because more and more of them than ever are, if they are still in school, they're having to work and go to school at the same time because of the economy.
60% of college students today are working in one type of job or another. The vast majority that help pay their way through school. They're very aware of the debt they're confronting and the challenges they're confronting going forward. And they're working hard. They're getting experienced. Many of them are in internships during the summer, both paid and unpaid. And they're very hard working. It's one of the most interesting findings, that the idea that we're creating a lazy youth group because of the internet couldn't be more wrong.
Well, you know, I've complained about this on this show before, but it seems we say that about every generation, right? We said it about the baby boomers, and then we said it about Generation X, and now it's the millennials' turn to be told they are the laziest generation ever.
Well, and in fact, I think there were some. I don't believe the millennials exist as a single cohort group. I do believe we've got the pre-internet group that's 22 to 30. We've got the post-internet group that's 12 to 17. And then we've got this little group of 17 to 21, 22-year-olds. And I think the older millennials, there were some truths in the descriptions of millennials, the more negative ones. But if the internet pioneers or the hooked-up gen are any indication, we've got a very hard-working, very task-oriented, and very positive group following them for the next several generations.
So it stands to reason that a generation so tied to media has been greatly influenced by it. And you remind us that these young people, these 17 to 21-year-olds, are the first true Harry Potter generation. What sorts of ideas did they explore and absorb in J.K. Rowling's books that seem to play into the way they operate in the world?
Well, in fact, yesterday the Huffington Post excerpted the chapter on the hidden messages of Harry Potter. And there's quite a controversy going on in the comments area of Huffington Post about the excerpt. The Harry Potter and his friends broke the rules. They believed in human rights. They fought against tradition. They fought against rules that didn't make sense to them. And they were willing to break the rules. Human rights were at the very foundation of Harry Potter and his friends. Dumbledore, as it turns out, according to J.K. Rowling, is gay. And they've learned a lot of the basic tenets that we've seen that apply to this generation come not only from Harry Potter, but from Nickelodeon, where five of the top six programs of all times for this little five-year generation are Nickelodeon shows, led by Rugrats and SpongeBob SquarePants. The girls, their favorite show of all time, and those were shows from before they were 12 years old, but their all-time shows, favorite shows, are Family Guy and Pretty Little Liars, shows that also confront tradition and break the rules. So I think this is a generation that's very aware of the rules, aware of the challenges when you break the rules, but are not going to accept orthodoxy or what everyone has accepted in prior generations just because they're told it's the way it's done.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak to Josh in Addison on the phone. Hi, Josh.
Hi. Very interesting program. Interesting fact that was pointed out to me by several local school teachers who I know recently, which I was absolutely horrified at. And the reason I asked them about it was because a neighbor demonstrated this. I don't know if your author is aware that apparently many 17 to 21-year-olds are no longer being taught how to read or write cursive or script writing in school at all, which I found absolutely amazing, and I think that's kind of a sad comment on the education they're receiving, number one. And my second comment is I beg to differ on your definition of community as it relates to the Internet. I might be a horribly old-fashioned person, but my idea of community is the real world where, you know, a person walks an elderly neighbor's dog or takes canned goods that they have that are extra down to a family at the end of the street or talks to the hardworking person at the grocery store. So I really have to look at your figure that many younger people on the Internet seem to think that they have up to 400 relationships online that they consider actual relationships. The only word I can think of that would apply to that, and I hate to be harsh, is delusional.
Well, Josh, before we get an answer from Jack for you on all those points, do you mind if I ask how old you are? Do you want to give a range?
I'm in my 40s at this point, but I, in general, I like to think that my attitude is younger, though I'm not sounding like it today.
All right. Well, I understand completely. I fall exactly in that place. What do you think, Jack?
Well, Josh, there were quite a few questions there. So let me first deal with the education question. And this is, of course, the first generation who grew up with No Child Left Behind, which eliminated many of the basic programs in the arts and physical education, in theater, reading, you know, reading and writing in many instances were left behind while the children were not. So I think there are several categories that because of the growth and expansion of online education, we're going to have a return to, and kids are learning. One that is an issue, and I'll agree with you there, Josh, is the writing, basic cursive writing. These are kids who are texting. They have their whole, there's a chapter in the book on text language and how that's going to evolve, and how, you know, the whole concept of spelling has changed because of spell check and the computer. So there, clearly you've identified one of the core changes, and that's a change I don't think we're going to see a return to. Real training on writing. Everyone's going to be a write like a doctor, I fear. In terms of community, there's a different sense of community, Josh. I would have, agree with you that certainly the, you know, walking the neighbor's dog and having your close-knit community, and a lot of that is, in fact, evolving and developing online, where you have websites and apps that are designed to help people find those, build those relationships and enable those characteristics. But we're also finding that this is a generation that's going online to do good around the world. They're contributing to social causes by liking. They're supporting marketers who contribute to social causes. They're engaging in online activities, online groups. They help whatever your politics. They were very active in helping to spread the word on the Occupy movement, even though they weren't out taking to the streets in support of the Occupy movement. So in many ways, they're active online, but not activists in traditional ways. Just because they're online, I don't think doesn't mean they're not going out and being involved within their local community. And in fact, we're seeing some evidence that local community groups are becoming more successful because their people are connecting online and communicating their message and bringing in friends, colleagues, and others through online resources.
Here is an email that relates directly to a trend that you document in the book. This is from Steve in Dallas, who writes, "My daughter just took a job with a nonprofit that facilitates water resources in developing countries. Her focus is on work that makes a difference, and she's less concerned about her image or having everything she wants right now." Steve says, "I see this in many of the youngsters I work with."
Steve, your daughter is absolutely right in sync with her generation. In fact, one of the things we saw in our survey that we conducted was how few kids of this generation are focused on making money. When we asked the same questions a few years ago about priorities, making money was a pretty high priority. Today, hardly anyone says it's their highest priority. They realize how challenging and difficult the economic times are. And in that context, they're much more interested in contributing and doing good. And that's a hugely important finding, I believe, for the future. You know, the nice thing about the feedback I get from the parents who are reading this book is that they're eager to share it with their college-age kids and their teenage kids. And the kids who are reading the book are eager to share it with their parents, kind of a, see, I'm not as bad as, you know, the world has been telling me I am. So parents and kids, educators, politicians are finding the book especially interesting because this group, even though it's small, I believe will represent not only a voting bloc, but will have huge influence over voters for the next several decades.
So you mentioned earlier, Jack, that the hooked up generation does not necessarily accept authority simply because it exists, but they are more critically examining it. But talk about how this generation does relate to their parents, to their teachers, to other adults in their lives that they, in fact, respect.
This is the first generation in a long time that actually likes their parents. For the vast majority report their parents as the ones they respect most and the most influential in their lives. Religious leaders, less so. Coaches and some of the influences that we've seen, less so. And a lot of that is coming from some of the realities we're experiencing in society. But a large number of these kids, when they graduate college because of the economics and the difficulty in getting jobs, are looking at moving back into their parents' homes. And they're actually not upset about this. This is not something that concerns them. And what's most interesting is, for the most part, their parents aren't upset about the idea of their moving back in. There's actually a really warm, strong relationship between the parents and the kids of just this generation. And it's the first time in decades that we've seen that pattern and trend.
So privacy is a really fascinating issue with young people of this age and could almost take up an entirely a book of its own in its entirety. But for this generation, there are really interesting contradictions in what is considered public and what is considered private and how the two intermingle.
It's a generation that is much more intelligent and knowledgeable about privacy than we give them credit for. They really do understand the implications of sharing their personal information on Facebook or on Twitter or in any social networks or in online. But they're much less concerned about it than older generations. They believe that's part of the price they pay for the access and the ability, even for marketers to be able to communicate relevant messages to them. They understand that it's appropriate for those marketers to have access to what they're looking at online. So they're cautious, they're careful. Companies like Google and Facebook and Twitter and Amazon and Apple have earned their trust, and if those companies should lose their trust, then it'll be lost forever to those companies. So they have one of the most important things for those companies that are accessing information is that they retain the trust of the constituencies and not take advantage of their access to this information. But in the meantime, the kids are being quite open online and aware that information is available and being used.
And marketers are having to find ways to create, and I'm using air quotes here, relationships with customers of this generation. Talk about what that means and what it takes to make it feel authentic as opposed to really, really artificial.
Engagement has become the hot word in advertising and marketing. They want to engage. The problem is most of the engagement that marketers participate in is one way. They consider that if someone likes you on Facebook or if someone tweets about you or updates you, that's engagement. It's not. What young people are looking for is a real recognition and acknowledgement that their interests and needs are being served. that companies are not just looking to have a two-way dialogue, you know, that's one or two communications, but an actual process where the young people can point out, like Steve's daughter, that she's interested in water resources around the world, and therefore Coca-Cola is an example, a company that's very involved with water issues around the world, would have an opportunity to engage with her, and she an opportunity to engage with them, not just blindly online or by responding or putting a like, but by actually having a person at that company who she's communicating with. And that's a very difficult challenge for marketers to embrace this idea that they actually need the human involvement online and just not be totally dependent on the technology. For all the dependence on technology of this hooked-up generation, they're a very human group, and they do like that human interaction and not just the technological interaction.
We have an email from Rick, and Rick wanted to know how this generation forms tangible physical relationships since a majority of their time is spent online.
Fascinating question. So many relationships are formed through text messaging. They're likely to meet each other and then move right to texting and Facebook to develop the relationship and to communicate and to learn about each other and to check out their respective Facebook pages. And they're as likely to Skype as they are to meet in person. They're not going out on traditional dates. The Friday night dinner and a movie is quickly becoming a thing of the past. Instead, they're evolving and developing their relationships through text messages and Facebook. And then if they feel there's a compatibility and an interest, they'll get together.
Jack Myers is with us. He's a media ecologist who chairs the firm Media Advisory Group. He's also author of the new book, Hooked Up, A New Generation's Surprising Take on Sex, Politics, and Saving the World. We'll talk to more of you after the break. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is media ecologist Jack Myers, who is author of the new book, Hooked Up, A New Generation's Surprising Take on Sex, Politics, and Saving the World. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. So, Jack, for the better part of a century in this country, young people have been attracted to celebrity culture. But this generation has different paths to celebrity, things as very democratic, at least in feel, as YouTube, this grassroots tool.
When I first started studying the generation, I was concerned that I was going to find a generation formed by Paris Hilton and Britney Spears. In fact, while they enjoy celebrity, they truly do look at celebrity as entertainment. And they understand that celebrities, even athletes, are not necessarily role models for them. They're the first generation to look beyond the role model aspect of celebrity, and that's the nature of the way celebrities have been treated over the last two decades. But they're also one-hit wonders. It's very, very few artists of any type today are sustainable with this generation. They're a generation. Music, for example, is part of the soundtrack of their lives. They're constantly listening to music. But because of the internet, they're constantly able to search for new music that they like. So they're moving from artist to artist to artist. And in that same context, they're moving from celebrity to celebrity to celebrity. There are very few celebrities who manage to build a sustainable relationship where they're guaranteed to have that box office status just because of who they are, irrelevant to the quality of the movie. They're very unlikely to have another hit album just because of who they are. And it's the same thing with concerts. We're seeing that the popular 60s and 70s groups are still generating large audiences and large venues, but the more popular contemporary groups, except for a handful, are going into very small venues and doing smaller clubs and smaller arenas, and forming their base around attracting a loyal group of fans who, for whom they're only as good as their last performance or their last recording or their last movie or their last TV show.
It's interesting because it sounds like celebrities have the same challenges that the folks at Pizza Hut and Pepsi and Toyota have trying to attract this audience.
That's so true. Just as personal relationships are short-term and they're not prepared yet to move into long-term relationships, they're not forming long-term relationships with marketers. It used to be that if a marketer got a 17 or an 18-year-old to buy their toothpaste or their product, or the first-time mother to buy a product in her early 20s, that product remained in the house and in their lives for decades. No longer true. They're as likely to look for that latest product, for that new product, for that product that has some social benefit, that product that's more environmentally beneficial, that product that has better vitamins or is healthier. They're constantly looking for something that suits their needs and their interests and their lifestyles more effectively. So the idea of the long-term relationship for right now is history. Now, I think when we get into a decade from now, when this generation is 28 to 32 or so, that's when I think we'll begin to see them form more longer-term relationships.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Chris on the line in Fort Worth. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris. Love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment. I'm 21 years old, grew up with the internet, and a lot of people that are older than me that I interact with say things like, my generation doesn't really, our education is horrible. We don't know things or remember things, but I feel like we don't remember things in our minds. We kind of keep it externalized, use Google and the internet as an external hard drive for our minds, not just for knowledge, but, you know, how to get places, our relationships and everything. And I just wanted to see what your guests thought about that.
Thanks. That's a really interesting perspective, Jack.
Chris, I wish I had included that concept in the book. That Google is an external hard drive. I do, in fact, point out, and I agree with you, and, you know, as I said earlier, the feedback from the generation your age to the book has been extremely positive, but you're also a generation that's been inundated with information. We have as much information every day created online as we had in all of history from the beginning of history to 2000. All the information that was created online in 2003, we create twice as much every single day. So information has become a form of garbage, barely useful for the most basic task. What you and others growing up with the internet are looking for is knowledge. What's actually information that you can use, that you can process, that you can apply in your lives? And I completely agree with you that the information is being discarded. For all of those who use FYI for your information, we need to start saying for your knowledge. And if it's just for your information, don't even bother sharing it because it's pretty much useless. If it's truly for your knowledge, then it's worth sharing. And I think that's a lesson not just for educators, for politicians, and for business executives, but even for parents and for young people themselves.
So I thought this was really interesting. A significant percentage of people in this age group say they're not interested in voting right now, but they expect to get to it at some point in the future.
No, actually only 10%, Chris, say they do not plan on voting in the presidential election.
Oh, forgive me. I had written that down wrong.
They're both planning on voting this time, and they plan on continuing to vote. They're not an activist generation, but they believe in their voice and the importance of their voice. 21.2 million kids 17 to 21 or 18 to 22 in that 4 or 5 year range, we expect upwards of 80 to 90% of them to vote in the next election and on an ongoing basis, and they tend to have a fairly cohesive political point of view that, as you might guess from their attitudes on human rights and diversity, tend to be pretty progressive and moderate in their nature. They're also, frankly, fed up with the polarization that they've experienced their whole lives, and they're really discarding those politicians who refuse to listen to, accept, or allow the opinions of others to take hold, that reject the right of people to have an opinion and to voice that opinion. So when you talk to people like Chris and you ask them a question about politics, they're as likely to open up with, "I don't know," because they don't want to position themselves as having an opinion that is right or wrong. But they will then voice a very strong opinion and typically have a pretty well-founded, intelligent opinion on a wide variety of topics.
So their leanings are largely progressive, but one strange hiccup there is in terms of gun policy.
Yeah, that was a surprise. Across almost every issue, we found, on average, 70 to 85% tended toward a more progressive or moderate position. On gun control, only 44%, I believe, said that they believed in strong enforcement of gun control laws or strong implementation of gun control laws. They take a more modified view and are a little more uncertain on how they stand on gun control, which was quite a surprise, frankly.
Do you think there's any reason for that in terms of the news stories that they grew up with or the forces to which they've been exposed in the media?
I think it's because they are really intelligent about the foundation, and because so much of a case has been made about the constitutional rights, Second Amendment rights, and I think they really want to explore that more. I don't know. It'd be interesting to do research this week after the events in Aurora and see whether there's been any impact on those positions. But certainly they recognize the legality of the issues in the constitutionality. But by the same token, they recognize the constitutional rights to vote. They recognize the constitutional rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They recognize the constitutional rights to fundamental human equality and follow those pretty closely as well.
Let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Patrick on the line in Dallas. Hey, Patrick.
Hello. Great to have your guest on. I had a question for him. With the rise of the socialization, how do we prevent ourselves and future generations from being kind of misled or confused by non-legitimate sources on the Internet?
By non-human sources?
Non-legitimate, I think you said.
Non-legitimate, I apologize.
Well, that goes to a certain extent back to the privacy issues, and it's an important question. The more the more knowledgeable they are about the Internet and its use, the more likely they are to be aware of everything from spam to inappropriate communications, and they're pretty activist when it does come to controlling access to them as individuals. While they're open with their friends, they're actually unlikely to accept Facebook friends if there's not some other personal trusted contact, if they either haven't met them personally or know them online through a good and trusted friend. This is a generation, because they grew up online, grew up in the sophisticated use of online technology for socialization. And while there have certainly been issues related to people meeting online, inappropriate use of online for all types of activities, this is a generation that I believe will be in a leadership position on forming protective covenants and protective rights to avoid those kinds of problems in the future.
Jack, how do these young people feel about their future? How optimistic are they?
They're concerned. They believe that the U.S. economy is slipping. They believe that the political infrastructure is collapsing, the economic infrastructure is collapsing. They're concerned that the role of the U.S. in the world is becoming less prominent and dominant. But they do not see these as negatives. They see them as realities that they have to deal with for their lives. So in that context, they actually feel like they have a better position because they're so knowledgeable about the use of the Internet that they believe they're going to be able to take those skills, those talents, that knowledge, and use it and apply it more effectively. So in many ways, they believe, and I believe they're right, that they will be getting jobs because employers will need their skills and their talents and their knowledge, and that once they get into those jobs, they'll emerge in a leadership role, again, because of their skills and knowledge of how to use the Internet effectively, more effectively than those who did not grow up with it being a part of their DNA.
And so we may be entering a moment in the world of work in the United States where mentoring actually goes both ways, from more experienced employees to those who are brand new from this generation, and from those of this generation sort of bringing older employees into the world of the Internet.
Chris, you're speaking to my heart now and my soul. I founded an organization called the Women in Media Mentoring Initiative a year ago, which has over 500 members in New York now, of women who are focused on exactly that role of dual mentoring, where younger women are helping to educate those more experienced in traditional business models about online and socialization, the Internet, the younger generation and how they act and think, while the more experienced women are mentoring the more junior ones on organizational hierarchy and structure and how to operate within an organization, because frankly, as they've grown up online, there's been no organization, there's been no hierarchy, there's been no structure, and they come into the workforce expecting to find the same kind of environment.
So you think our future is in good hands?
I think it's in great hands. I'm truly inspired and excited by this generation. I didn't expect to find them. I'm thrilled to have found them. The more people who give me feedback after reading the book, who confirm that this is the experience that they're having with their children and the college kids, the part of the hooked-up generation, who recognize themselves in the book. And I believe that we've got an incredibly positive, powerful, and important force of young people who are just beginning to graduate from college and move into the workforce, move into positions of responsibility, who I believe it's our responsibility to empower them and allow them to take leadership roles as we move forward across all aspects of society, from education to politics, to parenting, religion, and so on.
The new book by Jack Myers is called Hooked Up, A New Generation's Surprising Take on Sex, Politics, and Saving the World. Jack, thanks so much for joining us this hour.
Chris, thank you, and thanks to your listeners.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bilotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is senior producer. Learn more about Think and download the free daily podcast online at kera.org/think. Comments, questions, or suggestions to the show can be emailed to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.